You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Rise and shine, fantasy players. It is a beautiful day in the neighborhood. Tuesday, July 3rd. Let's cock-a-doodle do it. This is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez. They call me Speed Spitting Statistician. As always, I am honored to have as my co-host, FSWA Hall of Famer, the King, Scott Engel. Hey, Scotty, I was out yesterday. Did you miss me, brother man?
Yeah, good to have you back. I told all the listeners that you were out holding a special rapping camp for the youth of Manhattan, you know, teaching them all the finer points. And meanwhile, we kept pushing the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. You can now enter the promo code THEKING at checkout for a special discount.
Nice. Is it THE KING or just KING?
THE KING.
The King. I like how you have to have the right pronoun when you talk about the royalty that is Scotty Engel. Listen, we got
the fantasy executive, right?
Almost in the building.
Like, I know. Yes. You know what I'm communicating. Yes.
I know that you, Corey Parson, Jake Seeley, Chris Ventra, Greg Sussman, Brandon Marianne Lee, and some others just did a fantasy mock draft, so we're going to look at that a little bit later on. The King mentioned that the Roto Experts Exclusive Edge Fantasy Package is launched. We're going to look at some of his quarterback rankings. There's also great content from, you know, all sorts of experts here, okay? I'm talking about like Bobby McMahon with post-hype sleepers, Chris Mitchell with fantasy myths. We're going to delve into some of that. There's also so many ways that you could join the show. If you guys want to get down as we put the fun in functional sports radio, the number to call is 844-843-6879 if you want to chat it up with Scott and I. Also, listen, we have been doing the Face of Baseball brackets, and we are at our final. I think it's very fitting, Scott, that as we celebrate America and the boys of summer going into July 4th, we have the final of our tournament. The last two men standing are the number three seed, Jose Altuve, the 5'4" MVP, taking on the guy who may have the best WAR in any season of all time this year, the number four seed, Mike Trout. Last I heard, though, Scott, the Golden State Warriors have reached out to try to sign Mike Trout.
Yeah, I think they're going to reach out and sign Tom Brady, too.
Yeah, I know. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah. As you heard at the top of the show, Boogie Cousins, they're like matching LeBron, signing for signing, but I digress.
What do you think? I think Kyle Busch is going to go there, too.
Yeah, I know.
His fifth race this week.
Maybe Michael Phelps and Serena Williams can join as well. We'll see. What do you think about this
matchup? Hell, and why not The Rock?
I like that. Yeah, what do you think about this Trout versus Altuve? I mean, these guys have dominated their matchups so far. Who do you think is going to be crowned the face of baseball, Scotty?
This is going to be very close. I mean, both are, but I think a lot of the users are savvy and they're going to vote with who they think is the best player in the game. And I think, you know, statistically it's going to come down to that. And I think Trout is a little bit more recognizable than Altuve just based on his own merit. Trout is on the better team. But, I mean, Altuve's on the better team, but Trout is the better player.
Absolutely. So if you want to join the fun and vote in our final poll, hit us up at Spittin' Speeds, at Scotty RotoX, at The All-In Kid, and, of course, at RotoExperts. We're going to leave that poll up across the holiday tomorrow so we can get a good read on who you guys really think should be the champion. Hey, Scotty, I know I wasn't here but there was a couple of pieces of news over the weekend that I would be remiss if I either, you know, didn't check in on if you guys discussed it and what the take was or get your opinion on it. And, Scott, I know you're a big Seahawks fan, so I wanted to start with what I saw, kind of the news from Cam Chancellor. I saw that Cam Chancellor, you know, unfortunately his injuries kind of with his neck and back have not really healed up at all, and so it looks like he is walking away from the NFL. I mean, Scott, when you think about this Legion of Boom, Richard Sherman is in San Francisco, Earl Thomas is holding out, Cam Chancellor is, you know, moving away from the game. They've also lost guys like Michael Bennett this year, Abel, and others.
Stop, Stop, what? Stop. The Legion of Boom.
I know, the Legion of Boom
secondary.
Is the secondary. I understand.
Not the entire defense.
Yes, yeah. I know. The Legion of Boom is the secondary. I'm after that point, I'm going on to the defense as a whole, who have also lost Averill, who's lost Michael Bennett, who had for a time last year Sheldon Richardson. He has moved on. Scott, I know you are a big Seahawks fan. What, you know, is the window closing on the Seahawks? What's your reaction to this news? Obviously, Cam Chancellor, a great member of that Legion of Boom, of that defense, but it kind of seems like, you know, the cycle continues to go, and the Seahawks may be thinking about it in a different way. What's your take on this?
Yeah, you know, this is not a top 8 or 10 fantasy defense anymore. Could be top 10. Top 8, I think, is pushing it when you're drafting defenses. But they still do have some pieces if they keep Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas is still the best free safety in football. And let's not forget Bobby Wagner is still the best middle linebacker in football. And they also have KJ Wright, a very good underrated outside linebacker on that unit. And Frank Clark has really come on the defensive line, making a guy like Bennett more expendable. So it still can be a good defense. In terms of pure NFL, this team is still a playoff contender, I believe, because when you have pieces like Russell Wilson, Earl Thomas, Bobby Wagner, KJ Wright, Doug Baldwin, you know, that's still a good team with a lot of winning experience. You know, this was a dominant fantasy defense from 2012 to 2015. Although it didn't finish number one every year in fantasy rankings, you could know that there was a defensive floor in terms of them holding opponents down, getting turnovers, getting sacks, etc. And they're not going to be a great fantasy defense anymore for the Seahawks as a team. I think the championship window is now closed, but they can still be a playoff team.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, I think about it, Scott. I think about it similarly to remember when we were talking about the Baltimore Ravens defense, and maybe it was me and Jake, and we said, you know, if they take a step back from like truly special to like, you know, good, or even, you know, better than good, very good, or, you know, in that range, going from an elite top three, top five defense more to something like between 7 to 10 or something like that, that's a big step. So we shall see. You know, in the NFC West, also taking it away from fantasy for a second, you know, you have the Rams, who had the number one offense in the league last year. A lot of people really, really like them. They're all in this year. You talk about San Francisco with the ascension potentially, and I put that word potentially in because you got to remember his sample size, as Scott usually mentions. You got to remember, Jimmy Jesus was doing this with San Francisco at the end of the season, and it does not necessarily carry over, but there is a lot of buzz in San Francisco. And then, you know, you have the Arizona Cardinals, who a lot of people think may be kind of resetting with their rookie quarterback. Scott, do you think the Seahawks are going to finish second or third in the NFC West this year? I mean, do you concede that the division favorite is the Rams? And then secondly, what do you see prediction-wise, vis-a-vis the 49ers and the Seahawks? Who do you think actually comes out in second in that division?
I think the Seahawks do. Emery Hunt was and I were talking yesterday, and he actually believes the Seahawks are going to win the division. He says the Rams are the best team on paper, but the game is not won on paper. The Seahawks still have the type of players at key positions who know how to win and, you know, how to make clutch plays with the game on the line. I don't agree with him quite after what I saw of the team last year. He thinks the offensive line is vastly improved. I think it has improved. I don't know if vastly has improved, but he thinks Rashad Penny's going
to
make a big difference. I think this team can still be a wild card, but just, you know, the Rams are now moving into their second year, and there's so much talent on both sides of the ball. A lot of it is played together. I think the 49ers are a little overrated and going to take time to mesh there, and I think you're going to feel the effects in fantasy too if people overdraft Jimmy Garoppolo and Jerick McKinnon.
All right, fair enough. So you still see the Seahawks there as a wild card contender. You know, I can see them going 9-7, something like that. I can see that.
9-7 doesn't make the playoffs. 10-6.
You don't think so?
10-6 will make you get you that second wild card. 9-7, it's very hard to make the playoffs with that record.
All right, but like I said, you know, I could see them being, you know, as we discuss it, who some of these kind of like fringe contenders are, the wild card contenders, you know, the Seahawks can be in that group. Another thing I saw over
the weekend. It is the end of an era, though, because when the Legion of Boom was three guys, it was Thomas, Sherman, and Chancellor, and two of those guys are left. You know, you just got one guy out of the three left, so it's the end of an era, but, you know, for me as a fan, it was a spectacular era, two Super Bowl trips and a victory. And they never, for five straight years, they at least were in the second round of the playoffs. You know, I think fans of a lot of teams would want to see that. You know, ask a Lions fan or a Jets fan, would they like to have that kind of success? You know, I saw them win the Super Bowl for the first time and was a fan since 1984. So, you know, very successful era. But, you know, NFL is not for long. So, you know, it was a great half century, having half decade.
Absolutely, but you know, we don't need to give their eulogy just yet. That is why they play the games. Another thing that I saw over the week. Okay. The next thing that I saw over the weekend that I would love to get your take on is down in Indianapolis, I saw that Robert Turbin got popped for a 4-game PED suspension. Now, I didn't think, Scott, necessarily that he was going to be the lead back or anything, but I thought that he was going to be part of a committee, Scott, and I use that word committee wisely because it was more than a timeshare. When you talk about Marlon Mack, you talk about Robert Turbin, and we talk about a rookie that I know you have been pretty high on. You drafted him in a rookie draft. About Nyheim Hines. Now, if Turbin is gone for the first four games, do you think that provides an even bigger opportunity for a guy like Hines to maybe get a little bit of exposure and, you know, grab a part of what could then become a timeshare with Marlon Mack? Does he have a chance to kind of grab that role more definitively with Turbin missing the first month of the season?
No, because Turbin's role was defined as a goal line back, and Nyheim Hines is way too small to be a goal line back. I think what it does is, you know, I think it cuts out roles in the committee where maybe Marlon Mack is the outside runner, Jordan Wilkins is the inside runner, and then you got Nyheim Hines as the pass catcher. And it's either going to be a three-man committee or a two-man timeshare. I think this opens the door maybe for Jordan Wilkins to either be that sleeper or, you know, time for Marlon Mack to show that he can run inside and near the goal line.
Yeah, interesting. Listen, people will have some opportunity here. I like that you mentioned Jordan Wilkins as the guy because remember, and we've talked about this before, Scott, you know, everybody has a kind of different role. You know, there's the early down guys, there's goal line guys, there's PPR kind of guys. I remember we talked about this when we saw that Mark Ingram went down with PEDs. We were trying to tell people, do not just automatically assume that Kamara would wind up getting that because he was a different kind of back. So it's interesting that Jordan Wilkins.
You got, you know, some of these guys, you know, Mick, and some of those guys, you know.
There you go. So you got to get the right roles to fill out the entire room. So it's interesting. Keep an eye on Jordan Wilkins as potentially someone, you know, who could get an opportunity. And Marlon Mack will definitely have a chance to, you know, add to his kind of value with the Colts. Hey, Scotty, one thing I saw yesterday is Green Bay Packers running back Aaron Jones, you know, and this is kind of like this, you know, summer news. We hear everybody's in the best shape of their lives. We hear everybody's
summer
rehab
news.
Is going well, you know, that sort of stuff. Aaron Jones. Aaron Jones, we're hearing that he, quote-unquote, bulked up for durability and pass protection. Now, Scotty, I hear that with rookies, pass protection is one of the hardest things for them to, you know, kind of hit the ground running on. You know, it's kind of a learning process. And you don't want to be, especially in Green Bay, you don't want to put your quarterback at risk. I hear his collarbone is a little fragile up there in Green Bay. But the thing is, okay, so he bulks up. Right. But I'm actually concerned that this would have a negative impact on his rushing. You know, when I hear this, when I hear that backs are bulking up, I don't usually think it's a good thing. When you hear this about Aaron Jones, do you think that helps him going to be on the field in passing situations or does it really not move the needle for you? Tell me about this Green Bay, what is also a committee between Aaron Jones, Jamal Williams and still potentially last year's starter Ty Montgomery. What do you think about the Green Bay Packers running back room?
Yeah, with Aaron Jones, you know, he flashed last year and maybe putting on some more bulk, he thinks will keep him on the field more often. And more bulk could be more goal line chances as well. But this is kind of like when you ask me about these closure things like in Tampa Bay and Toronto, you know, who's going to be the guy? It's got to be played out. You know, you can't just say, okay, this is going to be the guy. I think during the preseason training camp, you know, we have to see who emerges. the worst case scenario is you got three guys, and the best case scenario is you're going to have Jamal Williams or Aaron Jones being the lead back, and both of them are going about in the same range as drafts, and you know, pretty much like 30 to 35 in like preseason running back rankings, because both Jones and Williams flashed last year. I think Jones has more big playability, whereas Williams could be more dependable. You know, this could be a true committee here. It's like, I can't remember the last time that the Green Bay Packers had a dependable running back who they really, really leaned on. Even when Eddie Lacy had his few good years, they were still going to the passing game first.
Yeah, I would say Amon Green would be the answer for that.
Yeah, that,
maybe.
Probably is. Yeah,
I would say you have to go all the way back to Amon Green, and then maybe Edgar Bennett before that. You know, what
Dorsey
I mean?
Levens.
Yeah, Dorsey and didn't Bennett and Levens even kind of share time?
Yeah, but Levens eventually became the guy. But that, throughout the whole Aaron Rodgers era, they've been a pass first team. So you know, absolutely. In that regard, it gives Ty Montgomery an advantage.
Absolutely. You can go. I like any time I could bring in Amon Green into the show, though. I will say that. I wanted to ask you, though, Scotty, about Ty Montgomery. What do you think? I mean, because, listen, he's still kind of like, first of all, he went into last year almost as a starter, remember, and, you know, kind of converted wide receiver type out of Stanford. But, you know, he's another one of these guys that maybe you think, Scott, his body was not able to handle the pounding. So they may look, you know, to limit his kind of his role, not limit his role, but be very specific so they can maximize it. You know, I would say a la Chris Thompson in the Washington football team. But here's my question for you, Scotty. I mean, this wide receiver room for Green Bay has changed over the last year or two. Remember, they moved Ty Montgomery, you know, to this running back position when they had, you know, when they had Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams and Randall Cobb, and they were intrigued by guys like Jeff Janis and Geronimo Allison. That's not necessarily the case now. Jordy Nelson is gone. Randall Cobb was spotted in a walking boot. You have Devontae Adams, but what do you think? Is there potential for maybe them to kind of move Ty Montgomery back to receiver? He is one of the better wide receivers they have on their roster right now.
I haven't heard anything about it. I think what's going to happen is I talk all the time about quarterbacks who can make receivers better. And I think it's just about who gets plugged in next to Devontae Adams. You can't trust Randall Cobb to stay healthy. So I think that really opens up a lot of possibilities
for
Geronimo Allison. But you never know. Could we see somebody like Trevor Davis or even a rookie like Jamon Moore maybe emerge here? I think we're going to have a sleeper wide receiver emerge in Green Bay. I think it's inevitable.
Right, and so that's what I'm saying, you know, because it could be someone coming out of nowhere. I mean, if I was the Packers, I would consider someone who has that NFL experience there with Aaron Rodgers as
they drafted three rookie wide receivers: Jamon Moore, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, and Equanimeous St. Brown. And just so we can say his name, I want it to be Equanimeous St. Brown.
Okay. Yeah, I hear you. I just want to have some of these names out here. When we're talking about the Packers, I mean, I want to say Geronimo as many times as possible. You're going to have like Aquinas
Geronimo.
Or whatever. So this is a good team for fantasy nicknames and for fantasy names. We'll see if they actually produce for your fantasy team. And Scott, one last thing, and I know you probably talked about it a lot yesterday, but this Jameis Winston thing. I mean, he's getting the three games, but then I also saw another note over the weekend, Scott, that I wanted to get your thoughts on. They're also saying that, like, if there's any other potential, like, future issues with Jameson, that they would consider something a much more serious measure, even including, like, banning him from the league. Like, this sounds very, you know, this sounds like something's really up with Jameis. Like, you know, I mean, it sounds like they are truly concerned about his kind of maturity, some of his behavior. It's, you know, but here's my question. Jameis Winston got three games. Last year, Ezekiel Elliott got six games. You know, can you help me make some rhyme or reason out of, like, the personal conduct policy, Scott? I mean, I do not understand. I do not understand how Zeke Elliott gets six games, right? But Jameis Winston gets three. And then you look at other kind of, you know, things recently. Remember, last year, was it, you know, like, Oh, what was it? Josh Brown, the Giants kicker, with his
Yeah.
wife, domestic violence. He got one game. You know, Tom Brady in Deflategate gets 4 games. Players, though, like Martavis Bryant, who use marijuana, get 16 games. There still seems to be no
Well,
rhyme or reason to this policy.
Brian had a previous track record, so
Fine.
yeah.
Fine. But talk to me, even just Jameis and Ezekiel Elliott. Why is 1-3 and 1-6?
You're asking for something that exist doesn't he, that can't be answered by anybody outside of the NFL office. You know, we talked about it last year incessantly when the Zeke thing was about to come
Right.
down. Nobody knew. Everybody was making a guess. Nobody knows why the NFL exactly levies these specific lengths of suspension, what it's going to take to have a certain amount of games or to just get suspended at all. It's all guesswork. It really is. I think, you know, that I think that's top secret info, and none of us outside the game know it.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's frustrating though. And you know, for me especially, the biggest one for me was what I threw in there, that Josh Brown one, you know, the kicker of the Giants with
Yeah.
his wife, and that was well documented, even some events at the Pro Bowl a few years back, and he gets one game, and you can compare that to others. It just it really it has no rhyme or reason to me. I completely agree with you, but it's a bad look in my opinion. You know,
Well,
they
when you
wanted to
look,
come out with a consistent kind of policy, and it still seems like they're fumbling over themselves with it.
with Elliott, I think they wanted to make a statement, you know, because he was a star player on what's why I don't know is considered a marquee franchise. And I think they wanted to make a sort of statement there. And I think that Elliott's behavior in a few ways, they kind of wanted to also get him to like wake up and mature. With Jameis Winston, you know, why not 6 games? You know,
That's what I'm saying. I
yeah.
mean, they want to get him to wake up and mature too. This guy is the potential face. He is the face of a franchise. They built an entire Hard Knocks series around this guy. You know, I mean, former Heisman winner, former number one overall pick. I mean, same kind of like young guy like Zeke, and they want to send a message. It's not like Jameis hadn't had issues in his past standing up on cafeteria tables with crab legs and otherwise. So, I mean, I hear you. I just think, you know, it goes back to just no rhyme or reason. I hear you,
No,
Scott, where
there
you kind
isn't.
of grab it at straws on this one.
There isn't. The only thing from a fantasy perspective is, you know, I wish with Ezekiel Elliott we would have had closure
Oh,
much
yeah.
quicker than we did with the Winston thing. It's like, bam, you know, now you already know.
This is true. At least you go into the season knowing that it'll be 3 games and then that'll be it. With Ezekiel Elliott, you were worried about, you know, will it be 0? Will it be 6? And then if it was 6, when in the season would it be? It got pushed back all the way to really mess up the push stretch run of fantasy football. Hey, Scotty, here's what I want to do. Yesterday, you guys over there at Studio 34 and Rock and Riley's in Midtown Manhattan, you guys had a fantasy mock draft, you know, with all the guys there. It was yourself, our guy, the all-in kid, the analyst, Chris Ventura, you know, the fantasy executive, Sussman, our boy, Emery Hunt, you were talking about, the rest of the best friends forever. You guys had a little bit of a draft. I would love to break down your team and get your thoughts on some of the other teams that were competing. Tell me about this, though. In the 10 spot, it says that there was a fan. How did this come together with the fan and some of these other guys, you know, Bill Enright, Andy Singleton? First of all, just tell me, how was it doing the draft with Studio 34? Was it pretty crowded in there with all these people? How was it? Had to be a fun atmosphere with all the experts talking football, you know?
They set it up nicely. It was myself, Bill Enright, Brandon Marion, Lee Ventra,
Some
and
BFFs?
you know, the Anthony from Fantrax and Emery all at one table, and then the BFFs in the corner, and Corey Parson and Greg Sussman hosting in another corner against
Okay.
another wall. Jake on Skype, and you're going to be able to see all the results this week.
Absolutely. So they are will be part of the Roto Experts exclusive Edge Fantasy package. Hey, Scott, I like where you're going here. you know, you had the third pick, right? So you have Gurley, right? You go Gurley 3 after Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott. Then you come around and get Adam Thielen and Doug Baldwin, 2 and 2, you know, in rounds 2 and 3. You wait on quarterback a little, wind up with Kirk Cousins in the 8th round. You wait on tight end, wind up getting the 5th tight end off the board, who is Evan Ingram, in the 7th round. Interesting pick here, and I also see that you are the man who wound up with Lamar Jackson towards the end of the draft. I gotta tell you, if Emery Hunt was in the draft, I would have expected him to wind up with Lamar
Jackson.
He is
in the draft. He
I know, but I would
draft.
Have, that's what I'm saying, I would have expected him to wind up with Lamar Jackson based on the way that he's been hyping
him up. He was the first one to take a quarterback. He took Russell Wilson in round 4. And I said to him, now, Emery doesn't look at things like us fantasy guys look at things, because he comes from a scouting and playing background. But I said to him, look, Russell will, you know, he's great for your fantasy locker room, you know, in terms of intangibles. But I don't know if he should be the first quarterback off the board, because the Seahawks are going to try to run the ball more and not let Wilson try to carry the entire team on his back this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. We'll dive into a little bit more of your draft, some of the things that happened in this draft a little bit later on in the show. I'm telling you, I'm a little bit intrigued, you know, when you got a bunch of quote-unquote experts, how, you know, quarterbacks aren't really going until the 7th round, you know. You get only 2 quarterbacks were drafted before round 7. That's very interesting.
And Wright got Rivers in round 12, and he can start him.
Yeah, we'll dive into that a little bit later on. We'll give you some baseball bumps and bruises and headlines as well. Roto Experts in the Morning. Come on right back.
Are you new to Daily Fantasy? Are you a veteran? Either way, you can better your chances of winning money and lots of it by going to DailyRoto.com. Multiple people have become millionaires thanks to the guys at Daily Roto. Why not take advice from the experts? You can become a millionaire too. Just go to DailyRoto.com to rock daily fantasy sports.
Welcome back. It is Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, the spitting statistician and the king. We are here putting the fun in functional sports radio. In the background, that's hype man Scott Angle bouncing around there, having a little bit of fun here on a Tuesday as we slide into a holiday. Hey, please. Scotty, what do you do for July 4th? What do you do for July 4th? Any barbecues? Watch fireworks?
I'm going to the movies tomorrow.
Oh, yeah?
I already got my tickets.
Oh, yeah? What are you seeing?
See that new Jurassic Park movie.
The Jurassic World, I think it is, or whatever.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Mr. Bavona there, down there in our fantasy.
Bavona sees everything, so.
Dilly Dilly. Yeah. He is a cinephile, and he's got a pretty good review of Jurassic World. That sounds fun. I don't really have many plans yet. You know, I'm hoping that there's going to be like an 11th hour barbecue invite or something like that, you know, and I'll probably wind up watching a fireworks somewhere. But the thing is, on Thursday, we'll be right back at it, 7 a.m. on Thursday. So, you know, we can't party too much. Hey, Scotty, we do want to let people know about some headlines and some injuries out of Major League Baseball. You know, I saw some interesting things over the weekend that I'm sure you touched on. You know, we've talked about the Blue Jays situation. Tapera goes on the DL. Looks like Pollock and Vizcaíno may be on their way back. Carrasco and Tanaka.
Pollock is back.
Pollock is already back.
He was activated yesterday.
I think they're trying to activate Vizcaíno, I think, today. And it looks like Carlos Carrasco and Tanaka could help some AL contending
rotations. Yeah, Carrasco
rotations,
should be
right?
back Friday. And Tanaka is going to make a rehab start tomorrow and could be back next week.
What else we got bumps and bruises wise, or is that
not just
some of
bumps
the big
and bruises? But Francisco Lindor last night with 2 home runs, a grand slam, and 7 RBIs.
Yes,
he's already got 23 homers. We're not at the All Star.
Wow! Game.
And the interesting thing about Lindor is, you know, we had a 33 homer season, but he never showed this kind of power in the minors. And you know, we talk about fantasy MVPs. It's like, have we not talked enough about Francisco Lindor?
Yeah, that's interesting. Remember, I mean, we've been talking about these American League shortstops left and right, from Machado to Correa to Lindor to your guy Gene Segura. You know, it is absolutely packed. And it's interesting how you talk about Lindor didn't have the power necessarily in the minors, and is showing that. Remember, I've been saying the same thing with my guy Glaber as well. Let me ask you this also, Scotty. Remember when a couple of weeks back I was so pissed off about the Baltimore Orioles and how like Brad Brock didn't get that save that one day?
Yeah.
It was like a 3-run. Okay. Did you see what happened in the Dodgers game last night, Scotty?
No. So the Dodgers, wait a minute. It was a 17-1 game.
Yeah. And Caleb Ferguson got a save in a 17-1 game.
Yeah.
How does that happen?
He picked because he pitched three innings in relief.
So what? They had a 16-run lead.
Yeah, but that's not the only rule that applies to the save.
I know, but didn't we read it last time? Didn't they have to qualify with all of those things? And one of them was like 3 runs or less?
No.
So in a 16-run game, you can get a save. That's kind of a low. You know how we talk about relievers in high leverage and low leverage situations? I wouldn't necessarily call that a high leverage situation, Scotty.
Well, the save is not always credited for the high leverage situation. It's, you know, he has to satisfy one of three conditions in there. He's the finishing pitcher in the game won by his team.
Yeah.
He's not the winning pitcher. He's not credited with at least a third of an inning pitch, and he satisfies one of the following conditions. He enters the game with a lead of no more than 3 runs.
Well, not that
one. And pitches for at least 1 inning. He enters the game regardless of the count with the potential tying run either on base or on bat. Or he pitches for at least 3 innings.
So there you go. We got that one because it was the 3-inning save, even though it was a 16-run game when he came in the seventh. So I just think that was interesting. This save rule is going to mess with a lot of people. All right, Scotty, let's go into your
– Shane Green went on the DL with a right shoulder strain.
Was it Jimenez we think is going to take there?
Yeah, well, he blew it, though, and Blaine Hardy got the save, so we'll have to see. Byron Buxton was activated from the DL and actually sent to the minors. Lonnie Chisenhall going to be going to the DL as well. Not a lot yesterday because there wasn't a lot of teams playing. Christian Yelich missed his 4th straight game. Jose Urena is going to come back on Wednesday. And that is pretty much it. A few trade rumors here and there about Kyle Barraclough maybe being dealt. Jerry's Familia, the rumor mill continues to churn. Maybe Michael Franco might be dealt. But that's pretty much it.
All right, fair enough. Keep it locked in. Listen, if you want more insight, you can always go on over to rotoexperts.com. Or don't forget about our guys over at dailyroto.com if you want to get ready and focused for DFS. I think we will have our guy Mike Leone on Thursday. He's going to miss our show in a couple weeks, but I do think we have Mike Leone this Thursday. This week, unfortunately, we miss out on getting our PGA knowledge from our guy Colin Drew. He usually joins us on Wednesday, but we will be celebrating America tomorrow. Scotty, I also want to tell
people, if you have a little girl and want to get her a gift, you get her a pony. If you got a little boy and want to buy him something, get him DFS with Mike Leone.
There you go. Yeah. The king, Scott Angle, is going to be dropping bars on us left and right. I also want to tell you, as we mentioned with DailyRoto.com, listen, if you want to go to a 2018 World Series game, you need to tune into the Fantasy Sports Network between July 8th and July 17th. We'll be playing the DKMS Trivia Challenge. That is your shot to call in and win with a chance to attend the Fall Classic in person. The number to play is 844-843-6879. The contest is sponsored by DKMS. Listen, if you don't know, we've been telling you for the last couple of years, we're partnering with DKMS to help fight against blood cancer. If you hit 300 in Major League Baseball, that's good. Okay, you could be an all-star, but that is not going to cut it as far as a match rate for donors here who are struggling with this disease, okay? Nearly 14,000 people every year must rely on strangers to step up and donate. Find out how you can help, all right? Go on over to dailyroto.com/DKMS. And remember, you can win 2 tickets to the Fall Classic, the Trivia Challenge, going on July 8th through July 17th, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Scotty, that's pretty soon. Next week, we're going to be doing some trivia, huh?
Yep. Here we go.
Sounds good. Sounds good. All right. So, Scotty, here's the thing. And, you know, it's funny. We talk all the time on this show, and to be quite honest, across this entire network, about how you wait on quarterback, right? Like, we don't think, generally speaking, that it's worth it to go ahead and spend the draft capital to get yourself an Aaron Rodgers or get yourself a Tom Brady, whatever the case may be, right? And because there's so many good options later on. But, you know, when you get all these quote-unquote experts in a room together, I think that happened a little bit to the extreme, Scott. I mean, you mentioned Philip Rivers going in the 12th round, Tom Brady in the 8th round. You know, I mean, Cam Newton, Deshaun Watson in the 7th round. I think, what do you think? Did we take that kind of wait on quarterback strategy all the way to the extreme in this draft?
Well, you saw Emory Hunt take Russell Wilson in the 4th round. So
as you mentioned, he was less of a fantasy guy.
Yeah, but you get different viewpoints with different people in the room. I think in a lot of drafts, somebody's still going to take Aaron Rodgers early in a lot of mainstream and non-expert drafts. The Brandon Marion Lee and Bill Enright decided to wait for very late. And then there are people like me who was somewhat in the middle. I don't want to wait till the 10th, 12th round for my quarterback because I want to take the best starter left on the board. When I fill out, say, my first 6 or 7 skill positions that I know have to be filled by starters, I'd rather take a starting quarterback than go for a backup at another position.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. Let me also, we've been talking a lot about the zero running back theory, you know, and Emory Hunt, who did go ahead and get Russell Wilson as his quarterback in the 4th round, also went up and spent the price to get in one of the elite tight ends. He actually made the pick of Travis Kelce in the 3rd round ahead of Rob Gronkowski. Both of them still on the board. He takes Travis Kelce in the 3rd round. You know, in the first 2 rounds, he goes Odell Beckham and Tyreek Hill, so he doesn't get his first running back until round 5. We've been talking about this RB zero RB theory, and let's see how he winds up, okay? Emory Hunt, yeah, he's going to have some good wideouts, right? He's going to have an elite tight end. But Scotty, as it stands right now, his starting running backs are Tariq Cohen and Nick Chubb. I would be concerned about that on a week-to-week basis, especially if Nick Chubb doesn't wind up being the dominant part of the timeshare or committee in Cleveland. And then he still, after that, doesn't get another running back until the 12th round. And, I mean, I don't know many teams that won't have three running backs by the 11th round. He drafted a defense before his third running back, and he's going to go to war with Tariq Cohen, Nick Chubb, and Elijah McGuire as his main running backs. What do you think about the way Emory Hunt approached the draft, eschewing the running back position?
I liked his first 2 wide receiver picks, although there's a few guys that would have taken over Hill. I think he made a few fantasy-style mistakes. Mm. I think you never take a quarterback or a tight end, I think, or you don't take both before you take your first running back, because then you're really, really hamstringing your running back situation. Maybe one, you know, take the quarterback or the tight end, but and then still you're pushing back what you could do with running back. Look, Tariq Cohen could become one of those zero wide receiver running backs that Mike Leone talks about in the exclusive edge package on rotoexperts.com. But to have him and Nick Chubb and roll them up both as starters, I think it's very risky, and then there's no depth behind them. Plus the fact he took both Kelce and Hill. I know he believes that Kansas City is going to be a very explosive offense, but I don't like taking 2 guys from the same team in the early rounds, because if the Chiefs score 13 points in a week and they only get the touchdown from Kareem Hunt and somebody else, you know, he's screwed for that week. So, yeah. You know, there's a few things I don't like. I always recommend don't take a quarterback or a tight end before your first or second running back, and to do it before both, I think, is a big fantasy mistake.
Yeah, I agree. The only other thing that I think was also very interesting, listen, if you're going to go up and grab your quarterback early like he did with Russell Wilson in the 4th round, then you don't need to double up in the 8th round and go ahead and get Drew Brees. Is this a super flex league?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay, so then he goes and gets, you know, Drew Brees, you know, who was like the 6th quarterback off the board, but his 2nd quarterback in the 8th round. Listen, he could have gotten, you know, in the 8th round, he still could have gotten, you know, Chris Thompson, Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, you know, a guy like Frank Gore, you know, a guy like maybe C.J. Anderson or something, you know, Aaron Jones, legitimate potential running backs, but he doubles down on quarterback in a non-super flex league. I find that decision very curious, especially if you're going to go up.
those struck me as reaches. Drew Brees right. and then Andy Singleton going with Frank Gore, who's right. his best days are definitely behind him. He's not even going to start for the Colts.
Right, absolutely. You know, in Miami, not he's down in Miami
now.
They're going to have Kenyon Drake there starting. But my thing is, like, listen, I believe you wait on quarterback. But in the situation where you're like, no, I want a Russell Wilson, I want a Aaron Rodgers, and you go up and get them, then you don't take another pick on quarterback, you know, until very later on. I would have waited, you know, for the you know, the Matt Ryan types, you know, a little bit later on, the big Ben Roethlisberger, who still has yet to be drafted, it looks like, in this draft. I actually think Roethlisberger could throw for more yards this year than
Yeah, I took Lamar Jackson in the 15th round with Roethlisberger still on the board. I considered Roethlisberger, but I said, at this point, I don't have to go by my ranks. I already have Kirk Cousins as my starting quarterback. I'm very comfortable with that. Lamar Jackson could be a pure upside pick who could – you know, just explode, and I want to take that flyer now that it's the 15th round.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's do this, Scotty. I want to compare, you know, how Emory Hunt waited, right? He waited big time for running back. But look at what Bill Enright did. Bill Enright gets three running backs in a row, right? He gets Zeke at the number two pick, McCaffrey and McCoy kind of in rounds two and three, right?
Yeah, so he can flex one of them, yeah.
Right, exactly. And then he winds up, you know, waiting on tight end, waiting on quarterback. So he gets Delanie Walker, whereas Emory had Travis Kelce, right? So it's like, okay, fine, you give Kelce an edge there, but really by how much, I'm not sure, right? Then on quarterback, Emery's going to be able to go Russell Wilson and Drew Brees, which, yes, is an advantage over Phillip Rivers, but how much? I'm not quite sure. Now let's look at the running back difference. Like you said, when Tariq Cohen and Nick Chubb are going week to week for Emory Hunt, Bill Enright's going to be running out Ezekiel Elliott, Shady McCoy, and Christian McCaffrey. Was this built as a PPR league, Scotty?
Half-point PPR.
At a half-point PPR, you got to think Christian McCaffrey, you know, kind of deserves that kind of level right there. And I think Bill Enright week to week is going to have a huge advantage over Emory Hunt at that position, which really matters. And Enright still winds up with Golden Tate, Larry Fitzgerald, and Jamison Crowder, especially in a PPR kind of league. These are the guys that do, you know, they get receptions. I really like the Enright approach when you look at the comprehensive team. Sure, Emory gets Kelce and Russell Wilson, but the guys Enright winds up with are not that bad, and he has a huge advantage at the critical running back position, Scott.
Yeah, he does. And Bill and I were out on the same page. It's like, oh, you took that guy, I was going to take him. Mm. Or, if you, I was
right, you
take
were right
him
next
if
to
you
him in
didn't,
the draft.
You know, and we were on the same page, you know, with a lot of his guys. It's just, you know, looking at his receivers, I don't know if I would have went McCoy in the third round where he did. And, you know, maybe would have went with Doug Baldwin, which I did. I'm glad he didn't, or even T.Y. Hilton or sure. somebody like that, because I don't know how comfortable I am with Golden Tate as the number one wide receiver.
As your one.
In a half-point PPR. He's got Fitzgerald, and he's got Crowder. Those are all okay, but I think he could have had a little bit better of a receiving crew. But then, you know, he waits for Phillip Rivers till the 12th round. And yeah. Brandon Marion Lee, she also waited very late for her quarterback,
Matty Ryan as well.
You know, Matt Ryan as a QB one. She could have. I would have went with Roethlisberger and been fine with that.
Sure.
I'm not a big Ryan fan, but still, she could have went with Roethlisberger in the 14th round mm-hmm. and gotten her starting quarterback. And I like what Brandon Marianne Lee did a lot. You know, she got DeAndre Hopkins and Michael Thomas right out of the gate.
Like that. Went rookie running backs.
Two rookie running backs with Jones and Geis. Then got Ernst and Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah, I like the squad.
Probably at that point, I would have taken my quarterback, but, you know, but she veered differently, and I think she still got a pretty good quarterback, although I would have preferred Roethlisberger.
Yeah, I hear you. What I would have done, the one thing I might have done differently if I'm Brandon Marianne Lee, and, you know, I can't all the rounds you got to look, I guess, but I would not, especially if I already had an elite tight end like Zach Ertz, I don't know that I would have drafted Vance McDonald in the 13th. Okay, in the 13th, you also, I guess, you know, your options for quarterback would have been even bigger. You could have had a guy like Matt Stafford as well, you know, but I don't think you need that Vance. I like Vance McDonald.
Look.
I'm high on Vance McDonald, to be quite honest. But, I mean, you probably could have gotten him a little bit later on.
I was shocked by something that happened to me. I took Evan Engram, right?
You still get Ricky Seals-Jones available.
How did Ricky Seals-Jones drop to me
yeah.
in the 14th round with as the 18th tight end off the board. And I said to my, I said out loud, I'm shocked that I just got Ricky Seals-Jones when we were doing the end of the frenzy. And Andy Singleton made a face like, oh, man, I guess I forgot he's on the board. You know, it's Seals-Jones is like, that guy could be like a top eight fantasy tight end this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, in he flashed for about 2 or 3 weeks last year. But you also just got to remember, really, like, what options are there? There's obviously Larry Fitzgerald there. They lose Smokey Brown, you know, and some others in the offseason. You are going to have the return of David Johnson, okay? They drafted the rookie Christian Kirk as well. But I can easily see Ricky Seals-Jones pretty much competing with David Johnson to be second on that team in terms of targets and catches, right?
I would not put him second on it. It's still going to be Fitzgerald. But, you know, I think he's going to be the third option. And I think in the red zone, he becomes one of their top options.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of the production there in Arizona will come from David Johnson.
I think he could score. He could catch 8 touchdowns.
It'll be Ricky Seals-Jones. Yeah, he could be a red zone threat, absolutely. So, listen, I agree. I think, you know, he should have been gone from this draft a little bit earlier.
Should have been gone.
When you got him in the 14th round, absolutely. I thought it's interesting. Nobody drafted a kicker in this one. Huh, yet, Scotty?
There are no kickers in this league. It's a Jake Sealy special.
Gotcha. Fair enough. Hey, Scotty, one other thing that happened over the weekend. I don't know if you discussed it, but I do know that you're big on the Mets, and I do know that you know about all sorts of fiscal matters. And so did you celebrate on July 1st? Did you celebrate Bobby Bonilla Day?
I don't totally hate Bobby Bonilla.
Right.
Because,
but what do you think about this contract?
It's a ridiculous contract, obviously. But I've interviewed Bobby twice.
Yeah, he's a good guy from the Bronx. I like Spanish guys from the Bronx.
I did a freelance piece for the official Kiss magazine. It turns out Bobby Bonilla is nearly as fanatical a Kiss fan as I am.
Really? You would not have guessed that?
Yes.
That would not have been the genre I would have thought when you talk about Bobby Bonilla.
Why not?
I don't know. It's just not what would have come to mind. I can't see him decked out. He gets dressed up like you with the face paint and the spikes and everything?
No, but he would fly all over different parts of the country to catch the band in concert.
Really? That's pretty cool. I gotta like that. And as you know, for those of you who are not caught up and don't know what we're talking about in terms of Bobby Bonilla Day, I mean, Bobby Bonilla last played, Scotty, with the Mets, am I right, in 1999, was not like hitting 160 at that point in time. What they did was they came to an agreement and deferred his money. He was owed at that point, I believe it was something like $5.9 million left. And they were like, you know what? Here's the deal. We're going to not pay you now. We're going to defer the payments and pay you for 25 years in a row from 2010 to 2035. And we're going to defer that, and we're going to pay you $1.19 million every year for those 25 years. The Mets, the Wilpons at the time, were like, hey, we'll defer it and add something like 8%. Remember, at the time, they were also dealing with one Bernie Madoff, and they were getting 10% returns at least. That's what they thought from their financial investments. So they thought that they could pay off this Bobby Bonilla contract pretty much with just like the interest and the, you know, the cream on top that they were making from their investments. Well, as you know, things went south with Bernie Madoff, and now they have this pretty interesting contract where Bobby Bonilla from this year and every year until 2035 will be getting $1.19 million from the New York Mets. By contrast, Aaron Judge and Luis Severino will combine to make $1.2 million this year.
Yeah, Bobby's now working for years, he's been working for the MLB Players Association.
I wouldn't work at all if I was him. Why work at all?
Yeah,
you're getting $1 million. You're getting over $1 million a year. Why work?
He still wants to be around. He still wants to be around the game. You know, he works in his special capacity, keeps him around the game. And you know, as for Bobby, you know, you never figured being a Kiss fan. I don't know if you know, but you know, Kiss has a huge Latin following. In fact, their biggest concert ever was 300,000 people in Brazil in 1983.
300,000.
Yeah,
that's like where what arena? Where did this happen?
This was like an outdoor stadium in Brazil.
It have to to be, right? It has to be. I don't know any place that can hold 300,000 people when you think about some of these venues. That's absolutely crazy, Scott. As I mentioned, though, Scott, listen, we talked about kind of waiting on quarterback and what that can yield you. We saw examples of it from Brandon Marion Lee. We saw examples of it from Bill Enright. You know, we saw maybe another example of it to a lesser extent, I guess, with a guy like Frank Stanfill, who goes and gets two quarterbacks back-to-back in the 11th and 12th round. I like the way Frank Stanfill did it, I got to tell you, because, you know, he's on the turn, right? He was the last pick, so he knew he could go back-to-back. He waits all the way until the 11th round, and then he gets not one but two quarterbacks who have, you know, kind of a wide variance this year, Scott. I mean, a lot of people think that, you know, both of these guys, if they perform up to their health and up to some expectations, could be absolute studs. But there are questions about both of them, so he doubles up on them, hoping just one of them delivers. I'm talking about Andrew Luck and Chiefs quarterback Patty, that's Mahomes. What do you think about the way Frank approached it, getting two quarterbacks back-to-back, both with some question marks around them, but incredible upside?
I like what he did because, you know, if Luck is healthy and inside injury says his optimal return date is September 20th, he's got one guy, if he's healthy or remotely healthy at all, you know, can be a number one fantasy quarterback for sure, and another who has the upside, you know, to maybe be like a, you know, top 10, top 12 quarterback. So he's taking a risk on both, but, you know, he's got a shot that one of them is going to hit. When you look at these expert drafts, and you're going to be able to see the full results, you know, on rotoexperts.com and on fntsy.com later this week. When you look at these experts draft, this is not what everybody does in a mainstream league. This is basically what people recommend that you do, because you're going to see somebody taking Aaron Rodgers in the second round in a lot of drafts. And if Tom Brady's no way is Tom Brady
dropping an eighth round pick
in a mainstream draft. Yeah.
So then let me ask you
when he was dropping, I was like, oh, I hope he gets back to me, you know, and it didn't happen. So I took Cousins.
Yeah, you get Cousins instead, which is just fine. Let me ask you this, Scott. So could you say that, right? In this draft, so many experts, so things like the quarterbacks plummet even more. You know, things like some of these sleepers that we've had our eyes on get drafted maybe a little bit early. How do you, if you're a fan, right, and you're, say, an amateur, let's say, player, how do you take something like this? When you look at an expert draft, how do you take this information and apply it to your draft? Because as you said, Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, they're going to go in the third round of most drafts. So how do you take this information when you see it in the Exclusive Edge package and apply it to your draft with your home league?
Specifically, when you look at the quarterback, you learn the lesson that while other people are jumping, that you don't have to. And then there's other players that experts will push up the board that you should keep your eye on.
Okay, so it kind of gives you faith to be like, I'm going to wait. I realize that if I wait until the eighth round, I can still get a quarterback that I'm comfortable with. Is that's what you mean?
Or even a 10th round. And then you say, okay, I'm seeing that, looking at these few experts draft and a specific player is getting pushed up the board. Well, maybe I should aggressively go after him and not wait for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I hear that. We put the fun in functional sports radio. This is how we do it. Tell Montel Jordan I said what's up. Scotty, enjoy your 4th of July. I will see you bright and early right here on Thursday. We'll dive into your quarterback ranks, all right? Happy 4th of July. Enjoy the fireworks.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Welcome back to Roto Experts in the Morning, right here on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Spitting Statistician is here. We got the all-in kid joining me as well here in the 8 o'clock hour. How you doing there, Jake? You missed me yesterday? How you feeling?
I'm doing good. It's a day.
It's a different experience. It's a different experience. Yeah. That's okay. You and Scotty be able to hold it down a little bit yesterday?
Yeah, we got it taken care of.
I appreciate that. I'm sure that you did. I don't know exactly all the news and notes that you discussed yesterday, but I do want to get your take on a couple of things. We will continue our team-by-team preview. We started with the AFC West as we closed off last week. We keep it going there, talking about the Denver Broncos. And then also, you guys did a little bit of a great little fantasy mock draft for football yesterday. You know, I saw some content there. Studio 34 was packed. You were there remote as well. So we're going to dive into some of this draft, and then we'll finish off the hour. Roto Clio, as always, but listen, DeMarcus Cousins and the Golden State Warriors may be ruining the NBA. We'll talk about that for a couple of minutes as well. So, Jake, two things that I did want to bounce off you. And here's the thing, though, Jake. We always say, I know you always respond, it's June, I don't care. Well, that is no longer the case. It is July, so we'll see how if you care about the July news a little bit more. We start with something that I saw over the weekend. I'd love to get your thoughts on, and that's that Robert Turbin got popped for four games for PEDs, okay? Now, listen, I thought Turbin was going to be nothing more necessarily than the goal line back. I did fear that this was going to be, to use Scott Engel's terminology, an actual committee with, you know, Marlon Mack as well as the rookie Nyheim Hines. I asked Scott last hour. He said that this doesn't impact Hines that much because he's still kind of the space pass catcher guy, but that it could give an opportunity to Jordan Wilkins to potentially get involved in this mix as well. Do you see the doors open for anybody specifically in Indianapolis with this news?
No, it's still a committee. It's the committee before this was still all three of them. It was just four before, and now it's down to three. Still a committee, still going to be frustrating, still going to have all three of them involved. Wilkins is arguably the best all-around running back. Marlon Mack tries to do too much with too much, or to every single play, and Hines is the pass catcher. So, no, this doesn't really change anything, honestly.
Okay. When you say, though, real quick, Jay, when you say that you think Wilkins might be the best overall back, is this
all around
back? Okay. Yeah, I hear you. Being able to do a lot of the different things. So that's different than when you say, like, that the talent wins out over time?
Right. Yeah, he's all around. He's
kind of more well-rounded.
Hines is better in the passing game. Turbin was better before he was suspended between the tackles. Marlon Mack's a little bit more explosive. He's good all around. He's good in all facets of the game. I don't see one area of the game where he's elite, and that's the problem of why he's not as good as Hines in the passing game. So he's not going to ever be, you know, a 20-touch game. He's not going to ever lead the backfield and be a workhorse.
Fair enough. I mean, you know, Jake, did you ever, for like regular Nintendo, did you ever play the original ice hockey game?
Yeah.
And you know how you could pick like the real skinny guy, the real fat guy, or kind of like the medium guy? It sounds right. It sounds like you're saying that Wilkins is kind of like that medium guy, right? Yeah. He has some agility. His shot is relatively decent. He could fight a little bit, but is decent at every area, but not a standout. There's other guys like Hines or Mack that can do other things. I'm reminded of the good old ice hockey game back in the day. Which country did you play with, Jake?
I don't remember. I remember the game. I don't remember which country I played with.
Oh, come on. It's almost July 4th. It's got to be America, Jake. Come on now. The other piece of news that I wanted to bounce off of you, I saw Aaron Jones, okay, up there in Green Bay, saying that he was going to put a little bit of weight on for two reasons. One, durability, and also for pass protection, right, to be able to be a little bit better in pass pro. Now, I realize that most of the time, rookie running backs, the kind of last piece of their game is this pass protection. A lot of rookies struggle with that, excuse me, out of the gate. A lot of different calls, a lot of different schemes, a lot of different responsibilities, especially when what you are doing is protecting the MVP candidate that is Aaron Rodgers. You know, I can understand you really trying to focus on this, but what does this mean for the Green Bay Packers kind of committee? You know, you still have Aaron Jones, you still have Jamal Williams, and don't forget about Ty Montgomery either. Does this make Aaron Jones maybe more of a complete back, more of a three down back to be out there on some passing downs? Because I don't like hearing that a running back bulks up. I actually don't think it helps their game. So I'm a little concerned. It actually makes me like Jamal Williams a little bit more. I know it's early July, so it's very similar to June news, Jake. But does this move, this news, make you think that Aaron Jones might be on the field a little bit more this year?
No, because we haven't seen anything yet. He can bulk up all he wants, but the problem is there's two things here. One is people don't realize, or they always assume this, and actually they do if they follow football for enough time is bulking up usually doesn't end up being a good thing.
Right.
Well, it's actually usually counterproductive to what the running back is, especially when you're talking about somebody like Aaron Jones who relies on the explosiveness. I mean, that's right. The fact is. And the second part is that Emory Hunt, will tell you, former running back, you don't have to be big to be a good pass catcher or pass blocker. Exactly. You don't have to weigh 225 to be a good pass blocker. You just have to chip. Tiki Barber wasn't 230, 225, but it's just you have to know how to chip the guy in front of you. Right. You don't have to take them on head on. So, no, as of today, this doesn't do anything, and as of today, I'm still doing what I was doing before. I'll take the less expensive Packers running back in the draft, and as of now, it's still Jamal Williams.
Yeah, I agree. You know, for running backs, it's about, and most blocking, it's about angles, it's about leverage, you know, it's about knowledge of scheme and who's coming, you know. So instead of necessarily being able to square up and be a roadblock, you're not playing right tackle, you know, it's still a running back. I agree with you, Jake. The idea, when I heard that he bulked up, I was like, this might make me actually like Jamal Williams a little bit better. any big time news, Jake, that you discussed maybe with Scott when I was gone that did move the needle, in your opinion, over the last couple of days that I'm missing? Or should we move on to our Denver Broncos?
He was pretty much talking about like package type stuff, and so.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I also got a long soliloquy out of the King this morning asking him about to eulogize the Legion of Boom, and he certainly took me up on that opportunity, although still saying that thinks the Seahawks are a playoff contender. He sees them ahead of the San Francisco 49ers in the NFC West. That's why they play the games. Hey, Jake, we are talking about the AFC West. We've been going team by team. We gave a little bit on the Raiders. Both you and I were down on the Raiders. We both liked the under when it came to their season win total, which did stand at 8.5. Both of us were down on that. Today, we're talking about the Denver Broncos. Jake, their over-under total for the season is 7. I'll get your thoughts on that a little bit later on. My first question is around Case Keenum, Jake. I mean, was last year an anomaly, I guess, is my main question. You know, he's kind of a guy, you know, in with the Rams and a bunch of other teams who just basically outperformed all his expectations. But remember, even when he was outperforming his expectations, his own head coach would kind of refuse to just announced that he was the starter. You know, it's like they didn't really want to hand the mantle over to him, hand the keys to the car. They certainly did it in the offseason. He goes to Denver where he has, you know, good weapons at wideout the same way he did in Minnesota. But I don't know if I can expect Case Keenum's performance last year to be replicable. So I'm hopping off the Case Keenum bandwagon. What about you?
Why? What's the reason to hop off of it?
I just don't think that, you know, what we saw last year was his true self. I think he could have been a product of the scheme. I think he could have been a product of, you know, Thielen having an incredible year. I think he could have been a product of that great defense, putting them in positions to win all the time. You know, a number of those things. And I just have not seen Case Keenum with that kind of breakout. And I don't know if I would go ahead and invest in it again, especially when you also consider, you know, new face in a new place, new scheme to learn, that sort of stuff. All those combined mean that I would look elsewhere personally. But it sounds like you think you have a little bit more confidence in him to replicate.
Yeah, it's just the fact of, like, what's the reason? Anybody out there that wants to say Case Keenum can't do it again is just they're throwing out, well, I just don't think. I don't think. I don't think. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to say anything that Case Keenum can't continue to be successful with the Broncos. And he's got two great wide receivers out there as well. He's got another good backfield behind him. So outside of tight end, just the success. And the fact was, he only threw for 3,500 yards and 22 touchdowns. It's not like he's coming off 4,000 plus yards and 30. To say that he's going to go out there and throw for 35 and 22 again is like, well, okay, so what? You know, that's not even that big of a deal. And you're not drafting Case Keenum even in most drafts. In one quarterback leagues, he's not even coming off the board. So I don't get the speculation against him where people are just like, oh, Case Keenum sucks.
So let me ask you this, Jake. I was hearing buzz, and you know, you follow the Giants closely. Wasn't there at a time where there was thinking this offseason that Case Keenum would go wherever Shurmur wound up as a head coach? And so I guess that's another thing. I wonder if he was, like, a product of the system. It seemed like Shurmur really liked Keenum and was going to be like, yeah, I'll take him as my quarterback. But I don't know now. He does go to a different team, a different scheme. Could that be a reason that's backed by an actual thing? Like, he was – maybe he performed because he really was good under that scheme with Shurmur as his offensive coordinator, and now that's no longer the case.
No, because that's not what Keenum was doing. Keenum wasn't trying to follow Shurmur. That was reports out of the Giants that they might try to move on for Eli Manning. That had nothing to do with Keenum looking for someplace to play.
I'm saying that because Shurmur, there were reports that Shurmur.
I know
would
what I'm saying, what I'm saying. That's not accurate. It wasn't had nothing to do with Keenum wanting to follow Shurmur because that's where he got his success from. That was reports about the Giants needing to move on from Eli Manning, and then because they had Shurmur bring in the quarterback that he just made good.
Okay. So I'm saying in general, whether it was, you know, whichever way it came, I was wondering that, like, could that be evidence of maybe. You asked me, like, why couldn't he do it again? What I'm putting on the table is because he was a product of the scheme and with the offensive coordinator as a potential rationale. And you're saying that, because Keenum wasn't trying to follow Shurmur, so it doesn't matter. He has confidence he could do it wherever he wants.
I have no idea what you just said because the audio just went out for like a minute.
Fair enough. Don't worry about it. You clearly think it is possible for Case Keenum. You are not necessarily thinking that he won't replicate this. And regardless of the, the potential ideas that I dream up, you are going to stay where you are. Jakey, when we talk about these running backs, I know you and I agree kind of on these running backs. I know we have said it before. Royce Freeman, we expect to eventually take this job, as we've talked about how the talent wins out, this kind of rookie cycle with the buzz that we talk about. Listen, Devontae Booker, they wanted him to have this job. They wanted him to grab this job last year, and he just never really did it. So they go out and spend the draft capital early in the draft, the second or third round, on Royce Freeman. We think he could be an RB2. Jake, tell me. I know we've said it many, many times, but we agree that he's going to surpass Devontae Booker in this backfield.
It's not even a surpass. He's just going to be the lead in that backfield because Devontae Booker is just going to be the pass-catching option at this point. But the problem with Freeman is similar to, like, Alfred Morris back in his day with the Redskins, is he's going to be seeing very little passing game work. So it's really down to the fact of he's going to take a little hit in PPR. Can he still be productive in a borderline RB2? Absolutely, because he can still rush for 1,000 yards and 6 or 7 touchdowns. But you're going to get very little added in the passing game, and that's just where the difference between him and, you know, some of these guys who are drafting as top 15 running backs come in. It's, anytime you get past the big guys and the ones that aren't in there for 20-plus touches, this is why I want a bell cow running back for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, let me ask you this, Jake, talking about still Royce Freeman. You mentioned that we don't expect much out of the passing game from him, right? Haven't we seen in the past couple of years, backs that we didn't expect a lot out of the passing game, and then the team just starts to utilize them in that way? I'm thinking about, say, like Todd Gurley under McVay. All of a sudden, they were throwing the ball to him outside, like, because they weren't when he was with Jeff Fisher.
No, that's completely different.
Okay, so I'd love you to clarify and explain that to me. The other situation, the other example I was thinking about was last year as a rookie, Leonard Fournette was thought to have no kind of addition to the passing game, and they used
again,
him a little
different bit.
Okay, so can you explain the differences to me?
That they can pass catch. That's the difference. Freeman's
not a pass
catcher.
So how do we know that Freeman can't? If we haven't, you know, if we just really haven't seen it yet, how do we know that?
We have. You can analyze the skill and watch the tape from college. Yeah. That's the why. That's why we know these kids can pass catch and the ones that can't.
And we thought that coming out of LSU that Leonard Fournette, like, had that potential. It just wasn't demonstrated as much.
100%. Same thing with Darius Geis this year. LSU just doesn't pass to their running backs that much. But when they do, both of them are above average and quite good pass catchers.
Okay, so we think that you mentioned Darius Geis, another rookie who maybe we didn't see it in college, but we think he can do it. So what do you look for when you say, like, the skill is there if we don't see it on tape as much, Jake? Is it, like, stuff that we see out of the combine that we see that he's able to do it, or is it in the limited kind of opportunity and targets that he does have that they do a lot with it? When you say we can see it, what are some of the indicators? What are some of the things you're looking for specifically?
No, specifically watching the tape. The combine doesn't mean anything.
Okay.
The combine's just combine. Everybody overrates the combine every single year. This combine is just affirming things that you know at best. We did this with Dalvin Cook, if everybody remembers. Everybody was downgrading Dalvin Cook after the combine because he had a poor combine. How did that work out for everybody? So the fact is combine's overrated. Always okay. Overrated. But the fact is you just watch the tape. If the kid can catch, you'll see it. Royce Freeman can't catch. He doesn't do a very good job of it, and then they stop using him because he can't. It's not the fact that, like, we never saw Freeman. It's that we saw Freeman get opportunities, and he doesn't perform well. Nobody's a surprise telling you that Alfred Morris in his day couldn't catch. Nobody, it's not a surprise to you if anybody told you that Jordan Howard has problems with pass catching. That's right. The same thing you see with Royce Freeman in college. And on the other side, you don't see it with people like Leonard Fournette, Todd Gurley, Darius Geis, even in limited samples.
Okay, so you gotta think about what they actually do with their opportunities when they get it in college. You can see the skill if the hands are there or not. Hey, Jake, let's go over to those wide receivers. I mean, Jake, are you gonna have more shares of Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders? I mean, when we talked about like the Packers running backs, and you said you'll have more shares of Jamal Williams because in this kind of timeshare, you'll take the guy that's going lower, right? In that situation in Green Bay is Jamal Williams. I remember years where Demaryius Thomas and Manny Sanders were very, very close to each other a few years ago, you know, and they were both kind of, top 20 wide receivers, shall we say. And in a lot of the rankings I'm seeing, there's a bigger gap than most years with Demaryius Thomas kind of having more spots ahead of Sanders. That being said, if you follow the same logic, would you wind up having more shares of Manny Sanders because he represents the value? How do you see this wide receiver room playing out?
No, because they're both going at values. They're both because a lot of people are not – they're going off what happened last year, and they're also discounting Case Keenum coming over as you were doing earlier. So the fact is Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders are both going at discounts of where their potential is because Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders were Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs before Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs' names were even known to NFL players. So the fact is they can still come out there and be a solid wide receiver two for Demaryius Thomas and a fringe wide receiver two high wide receiver three for Emmanuel Sanders. Neither of them are going close to that price, so you know I've actually went to answer the question about owning them. I've owned back basically about the same share so far because it just depends on when I'm drafting. I'll get Demaryius Thomas at a discount. I'll get Emmanuel Sanders at a discount. I'll be happy to own them. I don't want both of them, but you know it's where they are so far. They're disrespected in draft so far.
Yeah, but you wouldn't want both of them on your team, is that correct? Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, right?
I mean, if I got Emmanuel Sanders, it's not going to happen. But if Emmanuel Sanders kept slipping and he ended up being my fifth wide receiver and I own Demaryius Thomas, I'm not going to not take him at that point.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, at some point, everything is relative, right? At some point, it just represents a value. Kind of like I saw Bill Enright getting Phillip Rivers in the 12th round or something like that, and that draft that you guys did yesterday. We'll dive into that a little bit later on for sure. I want to ask you, though, Jake, listen – they have been trying to find a third wide receiver in Denver for a long time. I remember Cody Latimer. There's a bunch of guys they've looked for. They drafted a couple of rookies, you know, that I think are very intriguing. I am intrigued by Cortland Sutton. I am intrigued by Deshaun Hamilton. Talk to me about these guys and their profile in redraft leagues and then how they're different in dynasty leagues based on, say, like the contract status of DT or Manny Sanders. Because these are guys who I know coming into the draft, a lot of people like the skill set. Some people thought that Sutton could be the most, like, talented wide receiver in the draft overall. And Deshaun Hamilton out of Penn State, a lot of people were high on also. Denver winds up with both of them. Talk to me about your potential for these guys in redraft and in dynasty leagues, Jake.
Well, the thing is, the Broncos have been, but they're not looking for somebody that's going to be anything for fantasy relevance, just because, especially if you're talking about Case Keenum, 3,522, even if he upticks a little bit, it's not, again, he's not throwing for 4,000 plus and 30, there's not that much there for even a third wide receiver to even happen. But if you are looking for the one between the two this year, and again, I'm not drafting either. Nobody should draft either. It's going to be one of those waiver wire pickups if anything were to happen. But if you're looking for impact this year, it's going to be Hamilton because Hamilton plays the slot. That's where they don't have wide receivers and the slot. Emmanuel Sanders plays outside.
Demaryius Thomas plays outside. Emmanuel Sanders actually spends very little time in the slot. Both of them are in the mid-teens in percentage-wise of slot plays last year for what people might see in Emmanuel Sanders and just go out assuming things. That's why you go back, and that's where stats really come in helpful. Is, you know, you watch tape and you back it up with stats. Well, the fact is, they play outside. They've used all those guys you've been talking about as slot options. That's Deshaun Hamilton's spot. Cortland Sutton doesn't play the slot. Cortland Sutton plays outside. Cortland Sutton will replace Demaryius Thomas or Emmanuel Sanders, and maybe even next year, because both these guys only have 1 year left on their contract after this season with very little dead money, and they're both over 30 years old. So if one of them drops off, you have Sutton and Hamilton in waiting. They can move on from what? Heck, they can move on for both of them if they, you know, if this season really goes off the rails and they just want to go for a rebuild. You can see both of them out the door. But for dynasty purposes, I like both of them because of that point. Because as soon as both of them get an opportunity, they could be the new duo. The problem is like I said, it really comes down to how much longer both of them stick around. If one sticks around and one leaves, you like Sutton more. If both of them stick around for another year, you're still going to be liking Hamilton. So that's why it's a tough situation to say for dynasty.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you this, Jake. Something that you mentioned that I think is a very shrewd point that dynasty owners need to consider. When I'm thinking about guys like this, you know, one of the kind of things that is a tiebreaker for me is I look at the contract situations, right, of some of the other people, and we talk about how DT and Manny Sanders may be moving on and how that could accelerate the, path to opportunity for some of these guys. I remember recently there was a Washington running back that I was like, oh, but I knew he was going to be moving, so, you know, moving on. So I got the backup 1 year. I got like whoever it was, because I knew that they were like chewing up the running back and spitting them out for free agency. You knew like kind of that the Packers were doing that with Eddie Lacy. Do you consider that in dynasty? Because you think that, like, just like you're saying, for Sutton and Hamilton, for example, that their competition is probably moving on. It looks like Denver is trying to get ahead of this 1 year. Is that a little feather in the cap for dynasty leagues when you think about the potential movement and contract situations on the team?
Yeah, it's something you always have to take into account as the potential is if you can see next year is their opportunity, and sometimes it's where you get the buy low or draft low opportunities. But, you know, at the same time, they could bring somebody else in at free agency. Right. We've seen plenty of players before where we just want them to get the opportunity, and they just never do. It just kind of depends on the team. So, I mean, you could go the other way, too. And actually, look at the Dolphins as a perfect example. It's not only
Drake would be the man. Yeah.
He gets the opportunity. He looks great in the opportunity, and you think it's his, and you could have like stashed Drake last year with the thought of they're going to move on from Lamar Miller or drafted him, I should say. But the same thing is you go into this season, all of a sudden this team still doesn't want to go with Kenyon Drake, and then you're just sitting there with, you know, what the heck happened?
Yeah, I guess that's true. On the flip side, if you were ahead of the game and looking at contract situations, you could have grabbed a guy last year like Trey Burton, let's say, a tight end, knowing that he was going to have an opportunity given the contract situations that he was going to be a free agent.
And sometimes you have people that end up getting re-signed, though. I mean, if Trey Burton would have re-signed with the Eagles, and then that would have just been thrown out the window.
Fair enough, but I do believe, Jake, that there was enough buzz going into the end of last season that we knew he was going to get signed at legit money to be a starting
tight
end.
No, I know, but at that point it was too late. I was saying in the beginning of the season is you roll the dice and you've done that on players before, then they don't go anywhere, so then you're stuck.
Hey, there's always a risk, right? There's always a risk. That's why you are the all-in kid. Hey, Jake, I saw you on Friday repping on Frenzy. You were repping an all-in shirt. What do we have now? We have Jake, you got your own branding?
No, I've had that shirt forever. It's just it's the Adidas shirt from years ago where the Adidas did all-in for a while. It was a Notre Dame all-in shirt.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm saying wherever the camera was cut, I didn't see any Notre Dame logos or any Adidas logos. All I saw was all in. And I was like, look at this, Jake Seeley picking himself up. I like that, Jake. I'm not disparaging it at all, to be quite honest. I love
self-promotion. Making an all in shirt.
I'm saying you could go on over to our guys at RotoWear, maybe they'll hook it up.
I can make it myself.
All right, we'll make it in tough, but I love all the promotion. We got rotoexperts.com, the mark of fantasy excellence. Okay, and don't forget that the exclusive Edge package is on and popping. All right, Jake, here's the other thing I wanted to ask you about Denver. As I mentioned, Their over-under for the season is 7, right? And you can go on over to mybookie.ag. They have the props builder tool. I told you, you can make kind of a short-term loan, in essence, and go like Broncos over 1.5 wins or Broncos under 15.5 wins. But I'm not saying you're going to do that, Jake. The over-under for them is 7. Where would you go? Personally, I'm passing on this line. I wouldn't touch it. I think this is a pretty good line for the Broncos.
Yeah, I'm not looking to bet on it either.
Yeah, I can see them easily being kind of a 7-9 team. I am interested. I will say this. I am interested in the addition. I know we don't talk as much defense, Jake, but they did in their first round draft Bradley Chubb to kind of pair on the edge with Von Miller. You know how much I love Bosa and Ingram in this division as pass rushers. You know how much I love Watt and Clowney and Merciless. But this also has the potential to be a very fearsome duo combining for, you know, 20-25 sacks, right?
No, absolutely, and the defense is part of the reason why I won't bet on this team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I hear that. They also, you know, as always, they get their first two games at home. It seems like the Broncos always open with back-to-back home games. They get the Seattle Seahawks in a non-conference kind of road test as Seattle, a home game for them, as Seattle is kind of trying to figure out their new defense without the Legion of Boom. They're trying to work out a rookie running back, so it may be interesting. But like I said, their season win total is 7. Jake and I both think that that's a pretty fair line. We'd much rather you put your shekels on the under bet for the Oakland Raiders. But regardless, if you enjoy playing daily fantasy sports but are sick of the professionals using algorithms and hundreds of lineups and entries, try the Props Builder tool at mybookie.ag. Forget having to create multiple lineups. Ditch the hassle of dealing with late scratches and avoid experts winning 90% of the money. Invest in the players that you want without salary caps. And if you sign up for a new account right now and you use the promo code FNTSY, you can get a 50% deposit bonus. No more dealing with that nonsense, the algorithms and the late lineup scratches. You can make it happen. Go on over to mybookie.ag, enter the promo code FANTASY, FNTSY, upon sign up, and you get a little bit of bonus. Jake, if you were going to tease this line, would you be more comfortable with the Broncos like teasing it up to like 8 wins and then betting the under, or teasing it down to 6 wins and then betting the over?
I'd rather go up and under.
Fair enough. I hear that. I agree. I do think the Chiefs and the Chargers will ultimately be the class of this division. We'll give you more of our takes on those AFC West teams after the holiday. But when we come back, Jake, we got more to do. We want to break down this fantasy mock draft, and we'll also talk about some moves in the NBA. When we come back, Jake and Dane, it's Roto Experts in the Morning on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Want a chance to win 2 tickets to a 2018 World Series game? Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. There you'll find a link to a free DFS baseball contest every day. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, and they're looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival. Find out how you can help and play in free DFS contests with a shot at winning 2 tickets to a 2018 World Series game. Go to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS.
Roto Experts in the Morning right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am your host, Dane Martinez, the Spitting Statistician. I'm joined by my man, the All-In Kid, as we were breaking down the Denver Broncos. We were talking about the potential of Royce Freeman. Jake also thinks that this Case Keenum season of 2017 is not necessarily an anomaly, so keep an eye out on that in the AFC West. Jake, we also, as we're celebrating America here tomorrow, we are to the finals of our Face of Baseball tournament. The finals are Mike Trout and Jose Altuve. Now, I know that you believe the fans have misinterpreted our meanings a lot of times in this poll, but, you know, now that we're down to the finals, I think it could be interesting. Obviously, people believe that Mike Trout is the best player in baseball, but how do you think this is going to go down for the Face of Baseball, Altuve versus Mike Trout?
Yeah, it was, like you said, misinterpreted, so it'll probably be Mike Trout. And honestly, like I said at the beginning, if it was just the two should be the face of baseball, it should be Mike Trout anyway. But the problem is this is long lost ago of, like, the face versus the best talent, because there's a lot of people that are more popular and more easily recognizable. And the fact is, your casual fan on the West Coast probably wouldn't recognize Mike Trout if they saw him, or might not even know who he is. And that's the problem. You know, that's what happens. It's not East Coast bias. It's just the East Coast truth. Is, you know, the West Coast doesn't wake up till 3 hours later, and then we're in bed, and half the country is sleeping while the West Coast is still going on, and they just don't get the television and the publicity. And that's just because most people are in bed. That's just what happens.
Yeah, fair enough. I hear you. It's not like a bias. It's just pretty much like it's an exposure kind of thing. You know, you just don't see it. So I understand. Hey, Jake, let's keep it moving, though. We, you guys did a great draft. You know, what was it, 12? Was it 12 people? And a lot of them were inside Studio 34, and Rock and Riley's making it happen. I know the Best Friends Forever, you, the fantasy executive, our homegirl Brandon Marianne Lee. You know, we had our guy Andy Singleton over from Fantrax, the analyst Ventra, that sort of thing. First of all, talk to me generally. How was it going through this mock? First of all, I know you weren't in the studio. Was the studio crowded? Was it a lot of chaos going on? I imagine you get these 12 people in a room or in a chat or on a Skype or whatever it is together. I imagine it can get pretty interesting. Are there any funny things that happen? Any big time jokes? Any? Give me a little bit of the culture of the draft. How did it feel making it pop with these guys yesterday?
No, that wasn't chaos at all. You had 12 people who know what the heck they're doing. That's what it came down to. People who's on TV know how to handle it. And Greg and Corey kind of ran the shop, so they kind of moved things around. Yeah, so it went really well. It just, as much as I love my boy Emery, you can tell that he's coming from the football side of things and not from fantasy.
Yes, and I wanted to get at that for a little while. Now listen, I love Emery Hunt. I love Emery Hunt, okay? But I will say this. There are a couple of curious decisions, in my opinion, okay? And I'm going to list out a couple of curious decisions, and I would love to get your response on, like, which one was the most curious, shall we say, Jake? First of all, you know, we talk about that that zero running back theory, right? We were talking about that. I know you say that it only kind of really worked that 1 year when there were some injuries and like Gurley not coming on until late, that sort of thing. But I mean, he goes wide out, then he spends for the elite tight end in round three, grabbing Kelsey over Gronkowski. But then he also spends up for the elite quarterback, taking the first quarterback off the board, Russell Wilson, in the fourth round. And he's going to go to war on a week-to-week basis. That leaves him with Terry Cohen and Nick Chubb as his two starting running backs. And then, Jake, even with that situation, he decides to not draft another running back until round 12, after he drafts a defense, after he drafts a second quarterback. Talk to me about the craziest thing you saw your boy Emery Hunt do.
All the above. This is just, look, again, he's coming from the talent side of things, right? So he's, you know, it's like talent of real life and the difference between that and fantasy. And I've actually played in leagues before where I had a scout come over and kind of was, you know, I had played in like one or two fantasy leagues and jumped in the flex leagues as a scout, and you could see it. It was very similar. You overdraft positions. You don't understand the ADP and the value, and understand that even if you wanted Russell Wilson in a draft like this, you probably still could have waited till round six to get him, understanding that you don't need to draft James Washington or Christian Kirk, right, if at all, until the end of the draft. So it's just
defense round 11.
Yeah, so it's just the difference of somebody who's like experienced in fantasy and somebody who's experienced in the game. But the one thing you could take away from is he, like, if you look at it, you can see if you respect his opinion, which a lot of people do.
You know who his guys are.
Right. You see who he likes for talent-wise. And he's, we've had this debate about Nick Chubb, and he took Nick Chubb as a second running back. And not just as a second running back, he took him in front of Jay Ajayi. He took him in front of, looking at, like, just go
Ingram
down that round. Yeah.
Kerryon
Johnson. No, it was right after Ajayi. Yeah, it was right after Ajayi. And then Ingram, Kerryon Johnson, Mack, Carlos Hyde, Crowell, Duke
Crowell,
Johnson
in
a PPR, Chris Thompson in a PPR, Marshawn Lynch. So, I mean, that's just, you know, he likes the talent, but, you know.
So he's clearly high on Nick Chubb. Right.
Right.
Let's look at your team real quick, Jake. I mean, you know, we talk about the quarterback. I mean, Deshaun Watson sitting there for you in the seventh round. You know, we talk about how all things are relative, right? At some point, you got to pull the trigger. I found it very interesting. We talk about, like, how we wait on quarterback. Then you get 12 quote-unquote experts in the room. And listen, outside, like we just said, Emery went and reached for Russell Wilson. Greg Sussman at some point in the fifth round was like, wait, I can still get Aaron Rodgers? Sure, I'll do that. You get Deshaun Watson as third quarterback off the board, sitting there in round seven. Like, Tell me what your thought process is. You know, you see Bill and Scott and Andy drafting before you. At what point, Jake, are you like, okay, if he's still there this time around, I got to snatch him up?
Yeah, well, it's what I always do. I will always think about a quarterback in the 7th or 8th round. I'm not always going to take one there because if your typical draft is, you know,
you're gonna go
these
like three
guys
three
are
and
long
then
off
think
the
of
board.
It?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It could be 4 and 2. It could be 3, 2 and a tight end. I'm not going to usually take it. 99% of the time, I'm not taking a tight end before the quarterback before the 7th round. And once you get to the 7th round, if anybody in the top 5, that being Rodgers, Wilson, Brady, and Watson and Wentz are sitting there, I'll consider taking one of them. Or Cam Newton, I'd probably go, so maybe 6. That's basically where I'll start thinking about is those 6 quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. So 7th, 8th round, and Deshaun Watson was still there at the 7th, and I was looking at who was on the board, and I already had 3 of each, the tight ends. I wasn't going to go for Jimmy Graham. I was hoping Kyle Rudolph would make it back to the 8th round because I've gotten Kyle Rudolph in tons of drafts in the 8th round. He didn't, and I still liked what I ended up with tight end. And if you look at it, I didn't take Deshaun Watson. He definitely wasn't making back to me because Cam Newton, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, and Carson Wentz all went before I came back around. And then if that was the case, like let's say I would have went Kyle Rudolph and didn't take Deshaun Watson. You could say I wouldn't have got it, but my draft would be exactly the same as it is right now with just another position there, and then I would have waited till the end like the fan or whoever did. I would have taken Matthew Stafford in like the 12th round.
Right. Fair enough. Let me ask you one more thing about your draft, Jake, and then I have a question for you about Mr. Stanfield's draft that I think is interesting. You go ahead and get Julian Edelman in the 6th round. Now, we know he's likely to miss the first 4 games because of the suspension. We've been talking about guys like Malcolm Mitchell, and Jordan Matthews, Chris Hogan, who might fill that gap. You go ahead, though, and take Julian Edelman ahead of guys like Jameson Crowder, who I know we believe in PPR settings can be a decent wide receiver 3, guys like Marquise Goodwin, Cooper Kupp in that slot, getting a lot of catches. Talk to me about, you know, him, a guy like Mark Ingram, guys who you know are going to miss some time. How do you weigh out, you know, the value that they return in the 12 games they do play and kind of being, if you look at that, they would be underdrafted versus knowing that you're going to miss them for a quarter of the season and even more when you think about what the fantasy regular season is, really a third of the regular season for fantasy when you consider the 4-game suspension and their bye as well. You're going to miss 5 of the 13 kind of games there in all likelihood. Talk to me about why you decided to pull the trigger on Edelman where you did in round 6 as a 33rd wide receiver off the board instead of guys like, say, Crowder or Kupp that were still available.
It's because it's what you're going to get those weeks that they're on the field plus the replacement. Everybody always just doesn't remember that you can have replacement value for the time that's not there. And the easiest time to find replacement value is at the beginning of the season. I'll take a suspension over a mid-season injury every single time because I know there's going to be plenty more options in the first 3 or 4 weeks. And the fact is, Julian Edelman, when he's on the field, and it's not even just suspension, it's also health, but when he's on the field with Tom Brady, he's a PPR wide receiver 1, so you're going to give me that in the 6th round. I'm going to take it, and I'll figure things out, and I did for the first couple weeks.
Right, and then you got to figure, like you said, if you know the suspension, that's part of the reason why it was such a nightmare last year with the Zeke Elliott incident, because you didn't know if it was going to be the first 6 weeks of the season or if it was going to bleed on into the crunch time and on the fantasy playoffs, and that really caused owners problems. You're talking about knowing that at least it's going to be the first 4 games, so then when you make it to the playoffs, which of course Jake Seeley teams do, you will have, you know, kind of a guy like Julian Edelman as your wide receiver 2 or 3 and get a week-to-week advantage moving forward once he does come back. So I like what you're doing there, Jake. I want to ask you, though, because we talk about waiting on quarterback, I really like what Frank Stanfield did, Jake. He waits on quarterback, right? And then he's on the turn also. So he knows that when he goes rounds 11 and 12, he can just pinpoint and get his 2 guys, right? And he gets 2 guys who, yes, there are still some questions around, but on their ceiling is very, very high. The upside is definitely there for both of his quarterbacks. I'm talking about Andrew, I'm up all night to get lucky, and Patty, that's Mahomes. What do you think about what Frank Stanfield did, getting these 2 upside, waiting, then getting these 2 upside guys, thinking that the chances that one of them kind of ascend to where people expect, and he'll be sitting pretty with one of them. What do you think about the way Frank Stanfield approached quarterback situation?
No, actually, I don't like that move at all because you take one of them and you take the other pick should be the safe pick. You don't take two risks. What if Andrew Luck doesn't play again this year? Or what if Andrew Luck is nothing like we ever saw before? And now you're left with Pat Mahomes, let's hope he breaks out. What if Pat Mahomes also doesn't break out? You draft Andrew Luck and you pair him with a Matt Ryan or Matthew Stafford. You draft Patrick Mahomes, you do the same thing. You don't take both the risks together, and that's why I actually don't like it.
Interesting. So, you know, you're worried about, like, there is then a risk that both of them crap out, and that's the concern there. So if you're going to take the two quarterbacks, you're saying one of them should be more of a safe guy like the Matt Ryan. Or, you know, I'm noticing that Big Ben Roethlisberger has still yet to be drafted in this league. And that's a little bit interesting to me. You know, when people still get – I would have taken Big Ben over Ryan. I would have taken him over Dak. No. I would have taken him over over Carr. No?
No. Well, over Carr, sure. But the fact is because you need somebody for half the games. I don't know how long we have to do this where people continue to say, like, oh, well, football is not big enough a sample. I'm sorry. 3 years was big enough a sample for me, and that's what he did again last year. Now it's 4 years. After 4 years, after 3 years, after, heck, 2 years plus, the fact is something is different with Ben Roethlisberger in that offense. The biggest explanation anybody can come up with, and it's still just speculation, is that they run more under center when they're on the road versus at home, or vice versa. I forget which it is, and that affects him a little bit. But the fact is people can't keep ignoring the fact that he's just not as good. He's actually subpar on the road, and I don't understand why people just keep sitting there and they're like, oh, well, you know, he'll be fine.
That's interesting. You mentioned being under center. I would, you know, it is speculation. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I would imagine under center on the road, right, because of the need to hear stuff.
That's what I thought too, but I'm not positive.
We're not positive. Fair enough. Let me ask you this, though, Jake, because I've heard a lot of people talk about this, these home road splits with Big Ben, and how, you know, I hear you, like, once is something, two is a something, three is a trend, whatever that saying is, and this has been for years and years. I guess my question is this, Jake. Is this such a big deal that it also impacts your thinking on, say, like, Juju Smith-Schuster, home and road, Antonio Brown, home and road? Probably not AB, right? He's obviously matchup and whatever proof. But a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster, if you truly believe that Big Ben is less productive on the road, would it then stand to reason that you have concerns on Juju for half of his games?
Well, and that's the variety. I keep saying that Juju Smith-Schuster is overdrafted, because even if you look at it, forget the home road splits. The biggest problem that people just forget with him is he's not a typical number two. It's because you have Le'Veon Bell. At best case, any given week, he's the third option. That's best case, he's the third option. And let alone it's a game where he gets extra coverage, or he's facing an elite defender, maybe one of the top teams in the league, and all of a sudden he's the fourth option because you get Vance McDonald as the third option. So the fact is that, on top of what you're saying, is the fact that, if Ben Roethlisberger is only throwing for 220 and one touchdown, guarantee that one touchdown, not guarantee, but you understand what I'm saying.
Right, but Brown and Bell are just soaking it up regardless,
Yeah, and one of those two are the ones getting the touchdown, very likely. It's very unlikely that Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be the one that absorbs 60% of that on the road if that's all Ben Roethlisberger is doing. So to go back to the entire point of it, the fact that people are drafting Juju Smith-Schuster as this top 15, 18 wide receiver, it's what people do every single year. They get caught up in the hype and the fun and the shiny new toy and look at the explosive. And it is appealing. And the fact is, Ben Roethlisberger and Juju Smith-Schuster are going to have good numbers at the end of the season. You just have to understand that if you're building a team, it's going to be Deshaun Jackson-like. It's going to be up and down throughout the year.
Yeah, and absolutely. And don't forget, you know, remember, Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid like a running back and a wide receiver too. That's because he has the receiving numbers of a wide receiver too, to your point, pushing Juju down to really the third option on that team. We'll dive a little bit deeper into this fantasy mock draft, you know, throughout the rest of the week as we celebrate America here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Jake, I was at the Yankee game yesterday, okay? I'm chilling with one of my clients where they had the suite. It was very nice. It was very nice. But then while it happens, while I'm there watching the game, I get breaking news on my phone. I get an alert on my phone that DeMarcus Cousins has signed with the Golden State Warriors. And at first I was like, wait a second. How is that even possible? You know what I mean? And then I see that, you know, I guess he took like the mid-level exception, and that's like one way to replace JaVale McGee. I mean, how do you feel about this, Jay? Because I've heard people being like, yeah, good. They answer LeBron. They got to stay out in front. And I hear other people saying, you know what, that it kind of completely ruins the NBA for them when you now consider the likely starting five of the Golden State Warriors, okay, between Steph and Klay, KD, Draymond Green, and Boogie Cousins. Check this out, Jake. This is a stat I thought was absolutely hysterical. The Golden State Warriors, you know, assumed starting five that I just laid out, they combined for 27 All-Star game appearances among the five of them. The entire Southwest Division of the NBA and the entire Central Division of the NBA, those 10 teams combined, have a combined 22 All-Star appearances, five less than the starting five of the Golden State Warriors. Does this ruin the NBA for you, Jake?
Well, okay, so there's a lot of different things here. The fact is, when it comes down to the market, well, no, because just it's not just as simple as that's, you know, this ruins the NBA, shouldn't be happening, blah, blah, blah. So DeMarcus Cousins first. That's a very smart move by DeMarcus Cousins, in my opinion. And I tweeted that out yesterday. And actually, when they were talking about DeMarcus Cousins going to L.A., I first said when that was the case, is this is a weird thing for the Lakers to do because I don't see that being a draw for LeBron. Right. This is before they signed LeBron, because the fact is there is zero injury history positive return in the NBA coming from an Achilles. And that's the problem, is Achilles is a career ender. The best case scenario we have is Wes Matthews. And look at Wes Matthews. And not that Wes Matthews was ever on DeMarcus Cousins' level, but even when he came back, he's still a 14-point per guy. Like, he even had a drop-off. He's probably about 80% of what he used to be. So
you're saying if you're going to be on a prove-it kind of deal, might as well be in the best conditions for success to make you look good when you're proving it?
Well, that's what I was getting to, Dane.
We only got 2 minutes left. You know, we got RotoCleo. We got a lot of stuff, Jake.
We don't need to do RotoCleo. I wasn't even thinking about that.
All right, fair enough. Talk to me about DeMarcus. Go ahead. Talk to me more about Boogie.
So, yes, exactly that. So if you're going to do a one-year deal, which he needs to do, because next year he can get a bigger contract, because if he's 100%, it's not going to be till the next season. So that's why it's smart, to what you said. Yeah, that's why it's a smart move. The problem is people are frustrated because the Golden State Warriors were a championship team. And it has nothing to do with adding DeMarcus Cousins. You know, the Bulls, I got in debates with people last night. They added Dennis Rodman. They added Tony Kukoc. The problem was is they didn't have an all-star at every single position and then add another top 10 player in the NBA, which had already happened because they had already won a championship, bring in the second best player in the NBA and Kevin Durant. So that's the problem. That's why people are saying it's ruined the NBA, because it's a little bit different, but at the same time, you know, people love to hate Dynasty, so you'll get some of that. People will watch to hate the Warriors. So it's not necessarily a 100% bad thing, but at the same time, I think it does pretty much throw the regular season out the window.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with that, Jake, that the idea that it's good to have a villain. You know, it's good to have a villain. That's not bad for the NBA. People like to cheer against, whether it's cheering against LeBron, cheering against the Warriors now. You know, I just wonder, like, at what point, if at all, Jake? You know, I mean, you were an athlete. I was an athlete. At what point does a guy like Klay Thompson or Draymond Green be like, really? Are we making this a little bit too uncompetitive, or do they not care and they're like, nah, we're just trying to win rings however we can under the structure of the rules? I mean, and if a guy like him is going to take a mid-level extension, then come on in, welcome to the team.
No, well, that's why the regular season doesn't matter, is because you know, you could joke around and say they should win 82 games next year and never lose one, but they might, you know, just kind of take it lackadaisical because they're not even caring that much until they get to the playoffs.
Right, they may want to be more rested for May and June. You know, they may not try to do that. Remember when they did go for the 73 wins, that was the year they did not win the championship, you know, and so now they're trying to maybe pace themselves, and with four legit all-stars, they have a better opportunity to do just that and manage minutes across the regular season so that they can be primed and ready to go for the playoffs. Hey, Jake, maybe we'll do more RotoCleo tomorrow. We'll talk more about this breakdown. Oh, on Thursday. Celebrate the 4th, Jake. Enjoy your day. I will see you on Thursday. We'll talk another AFC West team. And, you know, maybe there'll be more free agent news to break down as well. Jake Seeley, catch him live the rest of the day on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.